You know, we've talked a lot on this show about activism and how it has changed this country in recent decades and well into the past. We've heard from early civil rights leaders like Emory University lecturer Kathleen Cleaver. She was one of the organizers of the Black Panther movement.
The 14th Amendment was passed at the end of the Civil War and gave Black people the right to vote. In the 60s, we're having a voting rights movement, okay? So America is very slow about recognizing what Blacks are entitled to, and particularly in the South, they want to undo and unroll and push back.
We've also heard from a new generation of activists, like Atlanta native Ariel Marie of the Black Lives Matter movement.
Jim Crow has just slipped on a new suit. There's so many laws that, and there's so many constructs that mirror exactly what was going on in the 60s. Not only are we battling that, but we're also having to plead and having to prove that there is, in fact, a race issue in America.
The past and present are featured in this month's issue of Smithsonian Magazine. It's called Black in America. Coincides with the opening of the new museum, and I'm joined by Michael Caruso. He's editor-in-chief of Smithsonian Magazine. He joins us from NPR in D.C., not far from where the museum is located. So a relatively short walk, Michael, right?
Yeah, but I came from home this morning, so it was a little bit longer.
Darn it. So tell me, how intense were the arguments over what to include in this issue and what you had to leave out?
Oh, they were pretty intense. Everybody is very passionate about this subject in all kinds of ways, and so there are lots of arguments about what to put in, what to exclude. There are 35,000 objects in this new museum's collection. So
not all out on the floor at the same time. Some of them are in storage.
No, yeah. A lot are in storage, although they have a dedication to rotate them around so that at least 70 to 80% of all those objects will be on the floor in the coming years. But there are, with 35,000 objects, so many of them that have such poignant and powerful stories behind them. We had a lot of debate within the magazine about what to include, what to photograph, and what to exclude, which was really the most difficult decision.
I bet. Was that final decision left with you? How did you make it?
Well, that's one of the benefits of being the editor-in-chief.
Yeah. And one of the sorrows, I assume.
Absolutely. I mean, it does finally rest with me, so it's my fault what's in there and what's not.
Okay, so you have four different covers for this magazine. I just got my issue at home. I have one cover. It's not the cover that's featured on newsstands. And that cover has been a little bit controversial. It features a guy in a hoodie, and he's holding an ice cream.
Yes.
And there are people that say the Smithsonian shouldn't be getting political. Were you making a political statement with that cover?
No, I don't think so. It's a young man. He is wearing a hoodie, but a lot of young men wear hoodies. And he's holding an ice cream. His T-shirt has superheroes on it. I think it's a very positive and innocent image.
So you told my producers that the article that has really kind of stuck with you is the one on Black Twitter. Why is that?
Well, I think it's such an amazing and powerful cultural force right now. In the last few years, Black Twitter has become an organizing force for protest. It has become a cultural hangout. It's a place where people watch an episode of Empire together. It has become a really powerful force in Black culture.
We actually took some tweets from Black Twitter, compiled them, and recorded them. Let's take a listen.
At Ariva Martin, in case you missed it, we are not poor and dumb. An open letter to Mr. Trump by an educated Black woman. Hashtag Black Twitter.
At History Heroes, Blacks are challenged to buy from Black-owned businesses to close gap. Hashtag Black Business. Hashtag Black Twitter.
At Black Girl Nerds, the injustice of a 1.9 million wrongful death settlement while officers responsible for the death of hashtag Sandra Bland go free is why we kneel.
At Speaking My Truth, for those who say we don't care about black on black crime, all of hashtag Black Twitter is discussing hashtag Rest in Peace Kendra, and we're all upset.
At Our Belt Day Before, if we get Nelly out of debt, hashtag Black Twitter is officially unstoppable. Hashtag get Nelly out of debt.
So, Michael, many people would think, well, this is not the kind of thing that this is beneath the Smithsonian's dignity, right? I mean, getting Nelly out of debt isn't what we usually see or talk about in the Smithsonian.
Well, the Smithsonian, there's nothing beneath the Smithsonian's dignity in that sense. We tell America's story, and Nelly is part of America's story. But to return to Black Twitter, the reason it's so powerful is because it's giving voice to the voiceless. The big part of the African-American story has been the inability to speak, the inability to be heard. And that's one of the most powerful things about Black Twitter today.
This issue is packed. There are so many different voices in here, it would be impossible for me to even list them off. But what were you hoping to accomplish with this issue?
Well, look, we had a very ambitious kind of goal with this issue, and that was to try to capture some of African-American life. Obviously, you couldn't do that in a single magazine issue. You couldn't do that in a single book. You couldn't do that in a library of books. And it's a real task to actually try to do it in a whole museum. But we tried to do our best with giving some taste of the range of African-American experience in America today and in the past. A big part of how we told that story is through the objects that are in the museum. So you have things that are just have such incredible power. You have shackles from the Middle Passage. You have Harriet Tubman's shawl, which was given to her by Queen Victoria.
Her shawl, yeah.
Her shawl.
Yeah.
And you have Nat Turner's Bible. One of the most poignant
Nat
objects.
Turner, who led an unsuccessful uprising.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And who's the subject of a new and controversial movie, Birth of a Nation, which is coming out in October. You have Malcolm X's tape recorder, the tape recorder he used to tape and write his speeches. You have got one of the most poignant things is just a pair of shoes. It's actually a pair of heels that were used by one man who was walking in the Selma March. And if you look at those heels, it's just the shoe heels, and you see how worn down they are. There is such a power in them, and that it's really moving. And that's true of so many of the objects in this museum.
We only have about 30 seconds left here, Michael, but why did it take more than 100 years?
Hey, you'd have to ask a lot more people than me. You know, what's amazing is the landscape of this museum. I just want to talk a little bit about that. The museum is right next to the Washington Monument. The Capitol is down the way, down one end of the National Mall. Lincoln's Memorial is down the other, where the Great Emancipator, where Martin Luther King spoke. And there were slave pens out on the National Mall.
So we're going to get to Natasha Trethewey here, and we'll bring Michael Caruso back. He's editor-in-chief of Smithsonian Magazine. Fifty-three years ago this month, a bomb exploded at the 16th Street Baptist Church in Birmingham, Alabama. That occurred as the predominantly African-American congregation prepared for Sunday service. Four girls, Addie Mae Collins, Denise McNair, Carol Robertson, and Cynthia Wesley, were killed. Many other people were hurt. That bombing served as the inspiration for Pulitzer Prize-winning poet Natasha Trethewey's poem, We Have Seen. She's the director of Emory University's Creative Writing Program, and the poem is published in the new issue of Smithsonian Magazine. Here's her reading of the poem.
The poem opens with an epigraph that reads, "Since the medieval period, the making of stained glass windows begins with the sketch of the chosen design, what was called the vidimus, from the Latin for we have seen. We have seen, view from the window of the 16th Street Baptist Church, September 15th, 1963. Because they must have wanted the symbol of their gospel visible to all, not only to those inside the sanctuary, and perhaps to show that the Savior watches over them both in and out of church, the congregation chose the painting not on canvas but stained glass, Christ the Good Shepherd in a window facing east. In the aftermath, you could have seen from a hole in the window what a photographer captured, a sign on the building across the street, the word Liberty its brutal irony in 1963, or the dark windows two stories above the shattered body of a car, the street strewn with debris, the slick helmets of police catching the sun, how it all seems crowded together, a flat perspective. In the short depth of field, everything is compressed into the ruined tableau. If you could look beyond it, the palimpsest of wreckage, you might see what should have been. A street scene in which the parked fire truck is moving through the grainy light, headed elsewhere. The few onlookers framed in the windows, leaning out as if only to catch a breath of air. The men on the street below them going about the business of the day as if it were any other. And in the middle ground, a man raising a camera to capture something we might have never had reason to see. Instead, his lens must find the wounded church, the mangled remains of windows, the twisted armatures, rosettes dangling from each gnarled grasp. And, as if to remind us of the angels, how they might walk unknown among us, as if to remind us of the martyred girls, like Addie Mae Collins, her face no longer a face her sister could recognize. Jesus, too, the window, his body left nearly intact, but faceless after the blast.
Pulitzer Prize-winning poet Natasha Trethewey reading her poem, We Have Seen. That poem is included in the September issue of Smithsonian Magazine. It's devoted to the National Museum of African American History and Culture. And you can also find that poem at our website, gpbnews.org.